There's digging, and then there's super digging. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods.
Hey, I'm Amanda Fletcher, host of the podcast Happy Mum, Happy Baby, and this episode is sponsored by F&F Clothing at Tesco, where you can find everything you need to get the kids ready for going back to school this summer. You can kit the kids out for the new term with uniforms and PE kits at just £1.50 a polo shirt, £3.50 for trousers and £2 a sweatshirt when you buy a multi-pack. Plus, you can get another 25% off the back-to-school range with your Tesco club card when you head in-store until the 28th of July. Make the most of this great value and head over to F&F Clothing at Tesco to find everything you need to get your family back to school ready. Return claims can only be made within 1 year of purchase. Proof of purchase required. T's and C's apply.
Hello everyone, it's the World Soccer Talk podcast. We're back. My name is Christopher Harris and I'm here with Kartik Krishnayar. Before we get into all the news, Kartik, there is a lot of news to get into, especially in our world, which is a lot of it is soccer streaming rights and who's got what for coverage. What have you been up to? I mean, I know, I mean, it's now this week, a lot of the teams from Europe hitting the US shores for preseason training. Near me, West Ham United in town this week, as well as Wolves will be coming into Miami, I think, today. And then, of course, there's Major League Soccer games going on, as well as USL. But what have you been watching? What have you been up to recently?
Really just kind of USL stuff. Just like in Europe, and I don't know if MLS has these rules, honestly, because MLS is strange with free agency. But just like in Europe, the team that I'm associated with is having a pretty wretched season. The roster build was about a project, about a multi-year project. But now we're in a position where we have to blow up elements of it. Just like in Europe with the Bosman rule, you have the opportunity to identify and sign guys who might be out of contract in the next 6 months. So a lot of what I've done the last 10 days has been focused on, okay, these are guys within USL who are out of contract. There's no club option at the clubs they're at. There is a list that the league publishes. These guys are free agents within the next 6 months. You are now authorized to contact the teams that they currently play for so that way you don't tamper, and then begin negotiations with their agents. So I've been watching a lot of USL because I've had to scout basically the whole league and all the guys who are free agents. I don't think this is the way it works in MLS because of single entity and limited free agency in that league. Although I think there is more free agency now under the most recent collective bargaining agreement than they used to have. But so now I get a taste of what happens with European technical staffs during the January transfer window, when under the Bosman rule, you've hit those last 6 months, right? And the rules are different in England, I should mention, but in terms of the continent,
I have to ask you, Kartik. So you're involved at a football club in the USL, doing a lot of consultancy and working behind the scenes in terms of, like the things you mentioned in terms of kind of player scouting and kind of looking to rebuild or strengthen a team. How much experience or how much of your experience playing Football Manager, the computer game, has helped you in an executive position that you're in right now?
Oh, not only playing Football Manager, but I've been involved. Don't want to disclose much here, but I've been involved in the past in building their database for the U.S. lower division. So I have the Football Manager experience. Football Manager is indispensable with this. Honestly, this is like playing Football Manager. And even to the point where, you know, at times you're saying, okay, this guy is out of contract in 6 months. Maybe if we make a transfer for him now, and we can extend him, we get a jump on it, which is something that happens in Football Manager, right? You see hey, maybe I should sign the guy in January if I'm at a European club or an English club, because I don't want this guy to be on the market in June or July 1st. Although now the transfer window really kind of opens the end of the season, right? Really opens in May. So there's a lot of that. Yeah, it is informed by Football Manager. It is unbelievable how realistic Football Manager is and how truthfully unrealistic like FIFA Manager mode and those sorts of things are when you compare it to Football Manager.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right, let's move into talking about the big news from this past week. And that is CBS Sports and Paramount Plus making two major announcements, pretty much almost back to back. The first announcement is that they have acquired the rights to the English Football League, which includes the English Championship, League One, League Two, and also the League Cup. So a big deal. Previously, ESPN Plus had those rights. According to my sources, even ESPN wasn't interested in renewing the deal. So what it ended up being is that Relevant Sports, who had bought the rights as an agency or broker from the EFL, went ahead then and shopped those rights around different broadcasters in the US, and CBS Sports and Paramount Plus got the rights. So I'll get your opinion on that in a second, Kartik. But and then the second deal is CBS Sports have renewed the deal with Serie A for 2 years, which we'll get to also, which means that Serie A coverage will continue on CBS Sports and Paramount Plus for the next couple of years. That one was a deal that has been a prolonged deal. It should have been done last year. And Serie A, as we've talked about on this podcast, wanted a big increase on the value of those rights, how much money they would receive from CBS Sports or whoever. Again, they shopped it around. CBS Sports was interested, but they were not interested in bidding the amount of money that Serie A wanted. It reached a point where, according to my sources, CBS Sports walked away from the deal and said, okay, hey, we're here. We're interested in this deal. We're interested in Serie A, but we're not interested in that price point that you're trying to sell the rights on. And then Serie A shopped that around, trying to get a deal signed with a different broadcaster. And it's probably the worst possible timing right now, even worse than a couple of years ago when Major League Soccer found themselves having to do a deal with Apple, which ends up being a massive deal over 10 years, but there weren't a lot of other parties interested in acquiring the rights. Same thing with Serie A, same thing with EFL. I think really for the leagues that are not the top leagues, the bubble has burst. But having said all of that, Kartik, there's a lot of information there, but what's your initial first impressions and thoughts in regards to CBS Sports' deals with the EFL and Serie A?
Yeah, so in terms of, let's start with the EFL, 7 years on ESPN, ESPN never really showed sufficient interest in the package until renewal was up, right? So they began showing more matches on ESPN2 this past season, discussion of it on the ESPN FC program. But this is the same thing we've seen with them with other properties that they've had the rights to and have lost, that it seems like there's this last flurry of activity to try and convince the league, or in this case, the third party in Relevant Sports that had acquired the rights, that they were a good media partner. I know from talking to some executives in the EFL, multiple clubs, that they are very excited about this deal. There is a feeling that you're going to get to see more of the championship than ever in this country. Obviously, there was a time when Fox Soccer Channel showed a fair number of championship matches. So maybe in the last 15 years, because there was a point when that happened. And when BN showed certainly some games on linear, despite their limited distribution. But a lot of excitement among executives in the EFL, a lot of excitement at the league itself. They feel like this is going to put them on a platform where they can show multiple championship games on linear or on fast, right? We talked about Golazzo, the Golazzo channel, and their impact on all of this. throughout the course of the next few years. There is also a feeling that there will be more coverage of the League Cup, which, of course, is part of this package, and which ESPN had relegated to ESPN Plus, even the final, and also League One and League Two. And we know not only Wrexham in League One, who will be probably the featured team more often than not, when CBS shows those matches on Golazo or on CBS Sports Network, but also other big clubs that are sitting in League One that are brand names, so to speak. And there's a feeling, talking to people, that the Premier League boost that NBC has given the Premier League has rubbed off on the championship, where a lot of these clubs are brand names in the United States, but that ESPN did not leverage that boost in a recognition and awareness of these clubs. Let's just, Leeds United is in the championship this coming year, right? Burnley is back in the championship this coming year. There was not that sort of boost for those brand names, if you will, that it wasn't leveraged, the boost that they had had, because of ESPN's coverage. So that's EFL. On Serie A,
Hang on, so yeah, let me just chime in on the EFL, and we'll get to Serie A and your thoughts in a second. So the EFL deal with ESPN Plus was a deal with ESPN Plus. It wasn't meant to be on ESPN2 or ESPN, the big channel, or ABC or any of those channels. So when the deal was done, you know, and signed, it was meant to be, okay, hey, ESPN Plus, this is the go-to place for soccer and sports. So go ahead and subscribe. And I think in some ways, ESPN at the end of last season of the championship, showing some of the games on ESPN2, something they had never done before. Wasn't so much of an effort to say, hey, EFL, look at what we're doing. We can actually have some of these games on television. But almost the opposite, where it's like, hey, we're not interested in renewing the deal. What the heck? Let's put some of these games on television. Let's try and get a nice bump on the ESPN2, get some bigger ratings. There's nothing else really showing at that point. So let's go ahead and add it to television, because we're going to lose it on ESPN Plus anyway. That's my thoughts on that. In terms of the numbers, it's a big increase. So it's gone from ESPN roughly last season and previous seasons had 210 EFL games shown on ESPN Plus. For this upcoming season, through CBS Sports and Paramount Plus, it's going to be roughly 250 or more. So we're getting about 40 matches more per season, at least. From the opening weekend, August 9th, that weekend, just to give you an idea, we're going to have 12 games across the EFL. So 9 from the championship, 2 from League One, and then 1 from League Two. And all of those games, all 12 of them, are available on Paramount Plus. And then some of them, actually, I think about 5 of them, are on CBS Sports Golazo Network. And then 3 of them on television through CBS Sports Network. So that's a big change. That's a big, big change. Kartik, like from previous weekends of the championship, and you and I know this better than anyone probably in the US. You're a regular Talk Sport reporter, giving you an analysis and kind of reporting about the championship every single week on Talk Sport. You know, my club, Swansea City, are in the championship, been there for many years now, and you and I both follow the championship probably more so than anyone in the US from a media perspective. And from a typical weekend on the championship last season, you'd have on a Friday, you'd have a 3 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. You'd have a 7:30 game on ESPN Plus on a Saturday morning. You'd have sometimes a 10 a.m. game, sometimes a 12:30 game. So that's, what, 4 matches so far that weekend. And then on Sunday mornings, you'd often have 1 or 2 games. And then sometimes on a Monday, if there was a game, you'd have a game there. So roughly, what's that, about 5 to 6 games basically per weekend. And now with the championship on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports, we're getting 9 championship games. So it's 3 more games per weekend on average, at least for the first weekend. And a lot of people were asking me, like, hey, Chris, how come we can't get every game? How come we can't watch every single game from the championship? And the reason being is once you add up all the number of games, I mean, the championship's a big league, what, 24 teams, you've got the League One, League Two. Once you add up every single game that's available, I mean, it's been played throughout the season, I think it ends up being about like 1,800 games. So to acquire all of those games and show every single game, I think it would be just overload. So for most fans, such as myself, you know, a fan of a team in the championship or a fan in League One or League Two, in order to go ahead and subscribe to watch every single game, you're still going to have to do the same thing that you did before, which is subscribe to a streaming service in the US like Paramount Plus. And then for those games that are not shown from your club, then you have to subscribe to your club's streaming service, which is basically iFollow. And that's the tricky part, right? If you're a Norwich City fan and you want to watch every single game, you subscribe to Paramount Plus for the games that are shown on Paramount Plus, and then you subscribe to Canaries TV. And the Canaries TV or any other of those EFL club streaming services, oftentimes per season is over $200 per season, at least. So it's a lot of money. It's a lot of dedication. It's a lot of sacrifices. But if you want to do that, or you can just watch every weekend, you'll see kind of a range of games from the Championship, League One and League Two. All right, Kartik, back to you about any additional thoughts about the Championship or in terms of your reaction to the Serie A news.
Yeah, so in terms of the Championship, I've already talked to, and again, right now my world is pretty self-contained, USL. By the way, it's the same. Some of it is the same broadcast partner. We had a match that was supposed to be on big CBS yesterday. We're recording this on Monday. That was preempted because of the news about the president. But it's kind of a Paramount Plus, ESPN Plus world. So same two broadcasters we're talking about. But I've talked to a lot of people within the USL since that deal was made that are saying, you know, now that they're going to be three more matches a weekend on, we don't have to watch as much of the Premier League or the Bundesliga or whatever else kind of conflicts. It's mostly those two leagues. And in fact, you mentioned some of those matches that were on ESPN Plus for the championship. Oftentimes, they conflicted with Bundesliga matches also on ESPN Plus. And if you load it up, your ESPN Plus app or your ESPN, whatever you used to watch it, Hulu, the Bundesliga thumbnails would come first. So there's a feeling that there will be also a prioritization based on the fact that CBS doesn't have the Premier League nor the Bundesliga. So there's just a lot of excitement so far on both sides of the Atlantic from talking to people about this package. And let's see if CBS is able to take advantage of the bump a lot of these championship brands have gotten and League One brands due to the popularity of the Premier League in the U.S. Moving on to Serie A, I think this is a stopgap deal. I'm glad Serie A is still on. It's a league that I think in the last two seasons has been as good as any in Europe. I know that's a controversial statement because people tend to think of the Premier League and La Liga as top tier and then everything else below it. But I think the last two seasons Serie A, at least at the top, at least the top five or five to seven in Serie A, maybe there's a big drop off after that, but top five to seven have been as good as La Liga and the Premier League and the Bundesliga. So it would have been a pity if it had been bumped to some non-mainstream platform. But a two-year deal is a stopgap, Chris. We have to express this. And this goes back, I know I've mentioned this repeatedly on this podcast, this goes back to Serie A domestic broadcast deal being really bad, them not getting the revenue from that they needed. So they needed to offset that in international markets, the U.S. being primary among those international markets because of the American influence in Serie A and the assumption that because the Premier League and Champions League had gone for so much money, that this is an opportunity for Serie A to capture that audience. One last point on this, which I think is really important to understand. Football itself is not growing in popularity in Italy. It's very static, if not in decline. So I think as time goes on, Serie A is going to have to become smarter about how they market themselves in foreign markets like the United States. It's not like Germany, Spain, England, where you have a built-in domestic audience and you have an anchor like a beachhead to build from. Italy is not that way anymore. Varying factors. It's not just the lack of success of the national team. That's a contributing factor, but there are other reasons as well, demographic reasons as well. So I feel like these 2 years, Serie A really needs to take the opportunity to use CBS wisely to create storylines, to create context, to create interest among American soccer fans who are not watching that league and who may only be interested in that league because Pulisic is there and Timmy Weah is there and whatever American, or just interested in the league because they think AC Milan and Inter are brands, right? Or and Juventus are brands. They really need to deepen that and take a page. I hate to keep saying this, but take a page out of the Premier League playbook and begin to talk about Como, for instance, right? With what Cesc Fabregas is doing there. Talk about that in the United States market. Otherwise, after these 2 years, there's probably going to be diminishing returns for Serie A in this country. This is a really critical period they're entering.
Yeah, I think in many ways it's kind of a fork in the road for Serie A. I mean, hopefully, so it's 2 years, right? And you're right, Kartik, absolutely right. It's a stopgap deal. It's basically Serie A running out of options and saying, coming back to the table with CBS Sports, saying like, hey, okay, in hindsight, yeah, let's continue this because we feel that we can build this into something bigger and better. All these Americans are playing in Serie A. There's opportunities to maybe to grow that audience. Let's work together in making this work. And then behind the scenes, Serie A probably thinking or hoping that within the next couple of years, especially with the World Cup, right, there's some massive explosion and all of a sudden there's all this new interest, kind of a new level of interest in soccer, where now all of a sudden people are like, hey, let's subscribe to whatever streaming service to watch Serie A for 2026 onwards. That's, I'm sure, what they're thinking. But it's fascinating to me because so it's two more years. I think, Kartik, that Serie A has to figure out how to improve its TV coverage in terms of camera angles, in terms of kind of just the production. And if it's not going to do that, if it's not going to make any leaps and bounds in the next couple of years with that coverage, that CBS Sports, I think, really has to kind of think about the commentators. That's, to me, as someone watching soccer, you mean, you and I watch soccer, as do our listeners, probably, what, hundreds of games, if not thousands, over 1,000 games a year. You mean, the level, when you watch Serie A, it's great football, right? It's great atmosphere, but it doesn't come through the TV set as well. And I think CBS Sports might have to think about, hey, we need to put some really good, at least one or two commentators that kind of add to the coverage, not use the world feed, which I think is pretty weak on the English language side, but use their own commentators, but someone that really grasps the Italian game. They have that with Matteo Bonetti. They have that with Marco Messina. But they need to kind of, you know, almost get like a John Champion or someone to bring in to kind of make it feel like high level. This is a game you have to watch and take it to the next level.
Yeah, I think production, I can't overemphasize how bad that is compared to some of the other leagues we see. So if you compare, let's say Bundesliga broadcast, compare the camera angles, compare the graphics, compare the cuts, even the I've noticed clunkiness and even wrong graphics in Serie A production, which is in this day and age unacceptable. There is just a certain sloppiness to it that you don't see in Bundesliga, Premier League, or La Liga. And La Liga has gotten significantly better in their production in the last, I would say, 3 or 4 seasons. So, again, Serie A is falling behind. And I do think one other factor here to consider is we can say, oh, there are all these U.S. internationals in the league, so it should be more popular. That did not work for the Bundesliga. Remember, Chris, you and I have talked about it extensively on this podcast back in the day. The Bundesliga hitched a lot of their strategy in this country to the number of U.S. men's national team players that were in the Bundesliga, whereas the Premier League, which was the runaway front runner in the clubhouse, to use a golf analogy, what didn't have any Americans of significance in that league at the time. Maybe DeAndre Yedlin was the only one, right, at Newcastle. Yet, it didn't make any difference. It really didn't. And I think this is something that Serie A has to understand. I think the strategy around building context and stories that allow interest from the U.S. audience, regardless of the players who are playing, is important. I think that most Americans, American soccer fans, don't know the history of Italian football beyond the three giants in Northern Italy, right? They don't even know the significance of, they didn't understand the significance of Napoli winning the title 2 years ago, right? So it's things like that, that have not been explained to them in a way that it has been explained by those who broadcast the Bundesliga. Here's the significance of Leverkusen, Premier League. Here's the significance of Leicester. Here's the significance of Aston Villa making the top four. That has never been properly explained by Serie A, and that is down more to Serie A than it is to CBS. So that has to be done.
Yeah, I think part of it too is with the American angle is that, and we'll see that with the championship, right? I'm sure CBS Sports are going to play that big time. I mean, Josh Sargent, I mean, you go down the list, all the different American players, Haji Wright, etc., Dara DK, all the American players that are playing in the championship and play that up as a kind of almost like an entryway or a gateway into watching those games and watching more of the championship or watching more of Serie A because there's American players that they're familiar with, and then hoping that a connection is made, right? You find a team that you like, or you start watching more and more of Serie A. But the interesting angle, I mean, I guess with Paramount Plus and CBS Sports Colasso Network, as well as CBS Sports, is, you mean, yes, they'd like to have, you know, basically hook more people into watching Serie A or watching the championship. But they have so many different leagues and broadcasts that in some ways it doesn't matter as much. You mean, because they have so much, you mean, so you watch CBS Sports Colasso Network. You will be able to watch USL games for free. You'll watch some of the EFL games for free. You might have some Serie A now and again. You might have a Champions League game. You might have NWSL. And then having watched that, maybe then you say, hey, you know what? I'm going to subscribe to Paramount Plus because I can get all those things plus much, much more, and movies and shows and things like that. But from the league's perspective, from Serie A's perspective, And from the EFL's perspective, this is an opportunity to get in front of Americans, to really kind of get more people watching your league and then increase sponsorships and deals like that, et cetera, et cetera. You mentioned sloppiness, Kartik, which is a good point in terms of the production of some of these Serie A matches. Now that Copa America is over and Euros are over, I thought I'd watch a little bit of MLS Season Pass this weekend. And I noticed something that I saw this past weekend that I've seen in basically the last few months too, which is sloppiness. I mean, a lot of the on-screen graphics have mistakes on them. So whether it's, it's on-screen graphic showing what the score is and the score is wrong. And I'm like, wait a second, it should be 3-1, not 3-0. And then I've seen that repeatedly quite a few times. So I don't know if it's sloppiness or if it's cutbacks or just that there isn't that much attention to detail. But it's not a good look when you're watching the screen and going like, hey, what the heck is going on here? Because this looks amateurish at times.
Yeah. Anything else? That's happening in USL also. Jonathan Starling, my colleague at Beyond the 90, has done a lot of logging of mistakes that have crept into USL productions in the last during this kind of summer of soccer. Maybe it's a midseason malaise. Same thing with MLS Season Pass, because graphics that were flawless at the first 2-3 months of the USL season now have mistakes with the scores, mistakes with the matches, what matches are coming up, mistakes in terms of the standings, and interestingly enough, the other night in one of the matches, mistakes in the listing of the commentators. They listed the commentators for another match, as the commentators for one of the matches. So I think it's all around, and you don't see this. I there are mistakes, okay, in Bundesliga, La Liga, but you don't see it as frequently as we've seen it in USL the last couple of weeks, and and you're not the only one who's told me this about MLS season pass. I've heard it from several people that it's been creeping in as the season has gone on. Mistakes with the graphics, kind of clunky cuts, sometimes some audio problems. Thankfully, we haven't experienced that I've seen yet in USL matches. But I think maybe, again, you know, if you don't have attention to detail and you cut back at some level in terms of production staff, these things inevitably happen.
The strange thing with watching MLS Season Pass is that now we've become so accustomed to watching MLS 360, the whip-around show, and especially this year because it's more energetic, it's more excitement. You never know what you're going to see in terms of what Kevin Egan and the rest of the team are going to do in the studio. It's become so much of a must-watch within MLS Season Pass. So if you do have MLS Season Pass, then MLS 360, at least for me, is kind of one of the selling points of that, is when you decide not to watch MLS 360 and say, you know what, I'm going to actually go to one of these games and I'm going to tune into, I don't know, into Miami against Chicago Fire, or whichever game it may be, it's such a letdown. It's like you're watching it and like, oh gosh, this is kind of boring. There's not much really happening. It's slow. It's methodical. It's like, you know what I mean? It's just a totally different experience where you're like, yeah, I actually prefer watching it on MLS 360. Then at least you get kind of, you'll see the highlights if something major happens in the game, and then you'll get to see some other games, those highlights too. But yeah, maybe that's the new way of watching sports in the future. And maybe MLS is ahead of its time. Of course, they're not the only ones and not the first ones to have a whip around show, but it does change your viewing experience quite a bit. So the EFL deal, to me, one of the questions that was asked in the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com, I think from Dave, he was asking like, hey, so Chris and Kartik, I want to know how this changes your viewing experience and if it does change your viewing experience of watching the EFL. Kartik, what about you? Is this, you mean, now that the deal is done with Paramount Plus and CBS Sports, I mean, what type of changes are you expecting in your viewing experience? Are you going to watch more or less or the same?
Hey, I'm Joanna Fletcher, host of the podcast Happy Mom, Happy Baby, and this episode is sponsored by F&F Clothing at Tesco, where you can find everything you need to get the kids ready for going back to school this summer. You can kit the kids out for the new term with uniforms and PE kits at just £1.50 a polo shirt, £3.50 for trousers, and £2 a sweatshirt when you buy a multi-pack. Plus, you can get another 25% off the back-to-school range with your Tesco Club card when you head in-store until the 28th of July. Make the most of this great value and head over to F&F Clothing at Tesco to find everything you need to get your family back to school ready. Return claims can only be made within 1 year of purchase. Proof of purchase required. T's and C's apply.
There's digging, and then there's super digging. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food, and then there's Baker's Superfoods.
Whether you know your kimchi from your kefir, or it's your first time boiling an egg, you'll be able to make delicious meals easily with The Guardian's new Feast app. Discover vibrant vegan dishes with me, Mira Soda, hearty comfort foods with Nigel Slater, bold flavours with Yotam Ottolenghi, and many more tasty offerings from expert Guardian cooks. Experience the ultimate cooking app, Feast, today. Download now and enjoy a 14-day free trial. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I'll watch more, absolutely. In fact, I mean, I think this probably may begin to dial down some of my watching of other European leagues, whether it's the Premier League or the Bundesliga. It would be those two that are affected with me. So I think it definitely helps. But let's see the longevity. We know CBS's plans initially, but this isn't the first time there's been a new TV deal, Chris, and there have been grandiose plans, and we're going to have all of this additional content around the league, and then the league doesn't meet expectations, or there's some sort of cutback on the network, and then you see things kind of fall revert to the mean. So at least initially, more viewership, but let's see viewing for me. Let's see how where we are in 6 months.
Yeah, at the end of the day, for anyone listening, this means more soccer, right? More soccer on television, more soccer on streaming. For me, it's probably not going to change my viewing experience that much. I'm still going to watch Swansea City games, my home and away games, and then I will have access to more games than before. But there's only so much soccer I can fit into a weekend, so I'm still going to prioritize whatever the biggest games are that day or that weekend and try to watch those. But then maybe I will watch more championship games if there's a game that's happening at the same time as another one that I just don't have as much interest in. So, but from the iFollow perspective, we haven't heard the details yet in terms of the price, but I'm sure it's going to go up from what it was last year. That's always a tough one to consider is, I mean, do you spend $250 a year to go ahead and subscribe to all the games or not? For me personally, as a regular soccer fan as well as a member of the media, but as a regular soccer fan of my team, oftentimes I'll wait for the first couple of weeks of the season to see, okay, hey, is this the team that's really playing a style of football that I believe in that I think can go places where I can say, hey, if I subscribe for $250 a season, I believe in this style and I'm seeing changes and I'm seeing positives, things are getting better. You know, it's worth experiencing that as opposed to watching the first few weeks of the season going like, you know, putting my hand over my head going like, oh my God, we're regressing. This is depressing. I don't want to pay $250 a season just to watch something that's going to just upset me throughout the season if we're not able to actually get promoted or reach the playoffs. I think that comes into the minds of a lot of fans. Even though I'm still a fan and still a diehard fan, it's just a lot of money to spend. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the listener mailbag. We've got a few comments here from listeners. First one is Ryan Evans in regards to CBS. And Ryan says, I thought for sure the EFL would either stay with ESPN or go to NBC. I did not expect CBS to get the EFL. With CBS Sports getting the EFL and retaining rights to Serie A, do you think that will make the trifecta and possibly get Ligue 1 as well from France? CBS is starting to become the home of football, which makes me wonder what else they may have planned, possibly the Bundesliga, after the ESPN Plus contract runs out. So Kartik, yeah, we haven't talked about Ligue 1. They have done a deal in France with DAZN and beIN Sports for domestic rights in France, which is the amount of money they're getting for that is about half of what they were getting previously. So that's a massive blow to the French league in terms of revenue, but at least they were able to get a deal done. What's your thoughts on the US market and potential of maybe CBS Sports getting the French league?
So John Texter, who obviously is the lead investor now in Lyon, has come out and criticized that domestic television deal. That deal is akin to what Serie A had to settle for in the Italian market, which De Laurentiis, the owner of Napoli, came out and criticized heavily. So in both cases, the domestic TV deals were worse than anticipated, or at least in Ligue 1's case, they got a deal because it took this long. They have owners of significant clubs. In the case of Napoli, the club that was the reigning holders of Serie A at the time, criticizing the television deals. Look, let's not forget women's side here. CBS also has the WSL from England. They also have the rights to various other European competitions on the women's side, which also clog up a lot of time and bandwidth on weekends, weekend mornings, U.S. time. So I don't know that they necessarily, I mean, I guess you could flip the switch and just throw Liga on Paramount Plus. I think the best option for the French league right now is to just take the loss in the United States, hold, kind of have a stopgap, throw the matches on YouTube for the U.S. audience, try and build some interest with kind of a more accessible, freer, if you will, not completely free, but, you know, easier point of access for soccer fans. The YouTube algorithm will probably pick it up for people who watch a lot of soccer videos. Hey, here's a Lyon versus Marseille. Come back to the table in the next 6 months and try and complete a deal to start for the 25-26 season. That's what I think the best bet for Liga right now is in the United States, because I don't think they're going to be in a position to get the sort of money they think that they should get. The interest in the league in the United States is waning. I mean, it may be non-existent, quite frankly, at this point. So outside of PSG, I think that they have a real problem, and I think they need to be smart and look at long-term solutions. The problem with Liga, and this is why they've gotten into so much trouble in their own domestic television market, or actually there are two problems. Problem one is PSG and BN. Problem two is that they've always taken the short-term approach and tried to get immediate money that had them off of television for a little bit in France. And that had them now, a couple of years later, going to the 11th hour, or 11:59, really, as the clock was about to strike midnight, to get another domestic TV deal. So hopefully they'll take a more long-term view, but maybe they will settle. Maybe they'll accept being the eighth or ninth league down the ladder on Paramount Plus or some other platform. And I don't think that's going to get the job done for them, honestly.
Yeah, I think honestly, the Ligue 1 should do the same thing that CBS Sports has done with Serie A. And unfortunately, I mean, I know the French league doesn't want this, but just renew the deal with beIN Sports for maybe two more years and just say, hey, I mean, just get across the line, make sure the coverage is still available in the US on television and on streaming, and basically just wait it out and hope for the best, hope that something changes. Because otherwise, Ligue 1 faces the prospect of not having their games televised or streamed at all, unless they went to some type of direct-to-consumer model, which is unlikely now that the French deal is done and has gone to DAZN and to beIN Sports in France. The YouTube option is always an option. The jeopardy with doing a YouTube option is that you end up with a deal that's similar to MLS, where it's not on, basically it's out of sight, out of mind. At least with the French league, if you walk into a random bar or a soccer bar, and I've seen this before too, where I've gone into soccer stores, like basically kind of retail stores that they're selling, you know, kits and cleats and things like that. You walk in and you look on the screen, and oftentimes what I've seen is that they've had beIN Sports on, because it's one of the few networks where you can leave the TV on all day and there's pretty much always going to be soccer on. If it's not soccer, it might be, you know, MotoGP or whatever it may be, but it's sports. But you're more likely to have soccer running throughout the day. You know, you could have CBS Sports, Golazo Network if you want to, but for retail stores, they're hooked up to cable. Maybe it's just easier to have beIN Sports. So you still have French games on television, even if that audience is dwindling on beIN Sports, but at least it's there. At least it's discoverable. It's not out of sight, out of mind. Next up is Dave, who wants to talk to us about USMNT. And he says, I agree. The Golden Generation tagline got carried away. It's a high potential USMNT pool relative to the US past, and nowhere close to the world's top countries. I especially dislike when men's and women's team members take part in a few of these arrogant commercials. I did some research last week, Carter, because I was thinking about a story idea, and I was like, where does this tag, the Golden Generation, come from, like in terms of soccer for the U.S. men's national team? Like, who was the first to actually mention this and kind of group these people, these players together and say, hey, this is the Golden Generation? From what I could see, it would have been about, I think it's about 2016, 2017. And I ended up not writing an article about it, but it looked like Top Draw Soccer, the website and kind of their social media channels were kind of talking about, hey, this Golden Generation coming through. This could be it in terms of USMNT, kind of all the star potential. And we saw what happened at Copa America. But yeah, definitely a lot of negative pushback against the golden generation, I think, in terms of how much it's been pushed in our faces and how much, I mean, it really did not meet expectations by any means. And if anything was overhyped, we should have been more realistic. Not us, but others should have been more realistic, like perhaps we were. Next up is Herb. He says, thank you for giving Canada credit for this Copa America. I will say that Fox's coverage of the Euros was far better than their Copa America coverage. And it's most likely due to their Team USA biases, which undermines their objectivity and the overall viewing experience. This was quite obvious whenever they were covering Canada's semifinal run. You had Clint Dempsey saying things like it should have been the US in the semifinal instead of Canada. Hang on, I'm not done yet. Carly Lloyd on Alexi Lalas' podcast saying you don't want Canada getting out of the group. And Alexi Lalas talking about how embarrassing it is for Canada to make it further than the US. I also saw very little coverage of Buchanan's injury on Fox, despite him being one of the most influential players. This was the tournament's Cinderella story, yet a lot of Fox's coverage boiled down to sour grapes from jealous rival fans. Fox is appealing to hardcore USMNT fans, and the coverage of this Copa America kind of shows that. However, they need to understand that most football fans in the US are not USMNT fans and are following other teams, including myself. So, Kartik, what's your thoughts on that one? Yeah.
Okay, so let me just confess right here. As we recorded this podcast, I was watching a news conference from Jesse Marsh from last week talking about pushing on from this tournament. I have been engaged with Canada for a while. I think I admitted on this podcast I was rooting for them in the last World Cup. I was rooting for them in this Copa America. That was my rooting interest. A lot of guys that I've worked with or know from the U.S. lower divisions and from MLS. So there is for those of us who work in the game in the United States, sure, there's a nationalistic appeal of the U.S. men's national team. But truthfully, working in the domestic game, I know more of the Canadian players and know more about the Canadian players. A lot of these U.S. players are dual nationals that I'd never seen or heard of until they were given a U.S. passport, right, or never thought about. The patronizing attitude towards Canada among American on Fox and on in terms of some of the influential social media people who cover the U.S. men's national team is embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I mean, it's like they're trying to generate this rivalry. They're always mocking Canada, who's a country that has come much further, much faster, at a disadvantage than the U.S. And a country that, quite frankly, I mean, I don't could do a whole podcast on this, Chris. So I don't want to get too deep into it. But as someone who's worked in the domestic game in the United States, someone who's worked with a lot of Canadians, someone who's worked with interacted with the CSA through the years, Canada was partially held back by its reliance on American leagues and American institutions in this sport. So it was almost like, in a way, they were a colony of the United States in this sport specifically. And then you get that patronizing attitude from Carly Lloyd and Clint Dempsey. What they said, what you just said, what was in the mailbag. That is specifically what I'm talking about when you talk about colonial attitude. That's what it is. The Buchanan injury. Buchanan's a player who just won Serie A, by the way. We're talking about all these Americans who are in Serie A. Buchanan's a guy who went to Inter, made a difference. They win the title, right? They run away with the league. And a guy that we developed here in Major League Soccer, we have a lot of guys in Canadian national team that have a USL and NASL experience. So it really is a great story about American soccer institutions developing players that somehow the American soccer media, by and large, wants to ignore or patronize. It stinks. It's angered me. And I'm pulling for Canada. I mean, with all of this stuff going on with the U.S., I found solace. First, John Herdman's Canada. Or actually started with Octavio Zambrano. Octavio Zambrano, John Herdman, it's Canada. And now with Jesse Marsh, a manager who 6 years ago I said should be the only candidate for the U.S. job. I put that on social media. I see that tweet has resurfaced in the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's been patronizing, and embarrassing. And last point, Chris, if you look at the starting 11 for Canada, okay, I will admit when you get deeper, the U.S. pool is much stronger, much deeper, much better if you go 1 through 23 or 1 through 30. But if you go 1 through 11, I don't think the United States is significantly better than Canada. In fact, I don't think they're that much better at all. I mean, you talk about guys like Jonathan David, Alfonso Davies, Eustachio, and then Buchanan when he's fit. You talk about those four guys, and maybe throw Kyle Aaron in there too. You're talking about five guys who are at a really high level. In Davies and David, two guys that are borderline world class, which I think the U.S. has some good players, some very in Pulisic's case, a very good player, but no real world class players. You've got two Canadian players that are kind of on the cusp of that. So let's dial it back a little bit and respect the opposition. This is a common problem with the United States and people who cover the United States and people who cover the sport in the media in this country. They don't respect opposition in CONCACAF, Chris. This is a continuing theme. 20 years ago, it was like, oh, how can we lose to Costa Rica? When you look at Costa Rica's roster, you're like, oh, okay, they're probably almost as good as the U.S. How can we lose to Honduras? And they won't even be aware when Honduras is missing guys or Costa Rica is missing guys. The Buchanan injury, something they should know all about Buchanan because he played several years in Major League Soccer, but in glossed over. I really associate with this this particular piece of feedback.
Yeah, it's something in terms of especially U.S. soccer, right? They've got a big decision to make for the next coach. And I mean, you look at Canada and what they did in Copa America. You look at really the immediate impact that Jesse Marsh has made. And same with this Mee Kartik. I've been listening into some of the interviews he's done the last couple of weeks. He did one with CBC, kind of a sit-down interview, and some of the post-match interviews he's done. A lot of things he's saying.
That's the one I was watching.
The CBC one.
Yeah,
right.
CBC morning show interview is the one I was watching. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that too. But a lot of the things he says, it feels like a breath of fresh air. It feels like, hey, this is somebody that can take them to the next level. And is looking at this team, I think tactically, right? Is looking at, okay, like semifinal, playing Argentina. How do we play against Argentina? How do we give ourselves a chance in this game? And we saw from that first half that if Canada had put away a couple of the chances in that first half, it would have been a completely different game. And as it was, I mean, they missed those chances. And then, I mean, Argentina scored and it seemed to be game over. And it was game over pretty soon.
The contrast, Chris, is when the United States on home soil played Argentina in the semifinal of the Copa America in 2016, they didn't generate a single chance in the entire match. They didn't have a shot, not a shot on target. They didn't have a shot in the entire match. I think maybe they had a shot from distance, like in the 90th minute, but that to me is a direct contrast. And that goes to the way March approached the match.
Yeah. And to me, it's kind of a looking at Berhalter in terms of the way he has his team setting up is just that's, I mean, he wanted them to play an attacking style of football. Possession based, just like all the other major international teams, not all of them, but some of the major international teams around the world. He wanted them to be almost like a Spain, even that type of style. But then looking at the players, we're not at that level. So it's like you said before, too, in terms of looking at how many really star potential, really kind of almost world class players that Canada has compared to the US. I love the US, but to me, Pulisic's the only one. McKennie is, I mean, looks like he's going to be pushed out of Juventus. Hasn't hit the heights that we expected, to me. And Tyler Adams, I think, is the best. But now we're getting into the same issue that we've had with Gio Reyna, which is injury problems. This is kind of reoccurring. And that's holding back his game in terms of not being able to play much last season, and now he's missing the start of this season because of back surgery.
It started at Leipzig. It was, you know, when he first got to Leipzig from New York. When Jesse Marsh actually is the link in that story, right? Because he had been his head coach in New York Red Bull, and then became an assistant under Ralf Rangnick at Leipzig. Adams was hurt. That was 5 years. That was over 5 years ago. So this is a recurring theme. Last point, Chris, you mentioned playing on the front foot. This might be off topic. Maybe there's something further in the mailbag about this. But the English media, the UK press, was just, you know, savaging Gareth Southgate for the way England was playing. Right now, France has won a World Cup and gotten to another final more recently with better talent than England. How has France played? Has France been playing on the front foot? No, they haven't. You look at the way countless national teams have approached winning tournaments through the recent years. Chile, when they won both those Copa Americas, were playing kind of on the back foot for much of that time. I think that there's this misconception, and it goes back to the U.S. Soccer Federation's long-term obsession with style, which I get, right? It was developed at a time when style was probably more important in the international game. And I would argue maybe it's more important than ever in the club game now. But It was developed at a time when you felt like you had to have a distinct national playing style and a DNA in your national team to perform at a certain level internationally. Now you see even managers like Marsh and Bielsa, two guys that have very clear playing philosophies. Jesse Marsh's teams had never played a different way until he got to Canada and realized, okay, I'm playing Argentina twice in this tournament. I've got to play differently against Argentina. Bielsa, who has a very identifiable track record going back to the early 2000s, so now 20-plus years of how his teams play. When they played Argentina in qualifying a couple months ago, they completely flipped the switch. So you have to have a certain degree of pragmatism at the international level, because it's not like a club team where you can pick players based on playing style, right? Where you can go into the transfer market and pick guys. And this, I think, may have been the fundamental flaw in everything Berhalter did. And so you need someone who's a little more resourceful than that. Marsh would have been that guy. I said it 6 years ago. I would say it again now, but I don't want him to leave Canada with what he's doing here. And I don't think he will. So that's off the table for the U.S.
All right. This is a great segue to Robert's question and talking about USA player development. And Robert asks, it would be great to get your viewpoint on USMNT player development. My question on this topic is, will players gain more skills playing full time in Major League Soccer or USL, or as bit players in Europe? That's a big question, Kartik, and that's a question that this is what's happening right now, right? You look at Matt Turner, you look at Weston McKennie, which he might be without a team pretty soon unless he finds a deal in, you know, the Premier League or England or back to the States, whoever it may be. But a lot of the USMNT players, you know, Giorena, another example, are not getting the playing time that they need to play at a high level to get better. So is it better that they are fringe players, basically, at a lot of these European clubs? Or is it better that they come back and be one of the first names on the team sheet in Major League Soccer or USL?
Every player is different. I think that some guys are wired in a way that they have to be at the highest competitive level. Other guys want to be leaders. They want to take things upon them. And they're more likely to be leaders in MLS or USL than at the European clubs they're currently at. Now, again, we're talking about Canada. We're talking about the previous U.S. teams that were much more successful than this current iteration of the national team, the so-called golden generation. If you look at the teams Bob Bradley had, he only had a handful of guys in MLS, and that included Landon Donovan. But the guys that he had were leaders at the clubs they were at. Clint Dempsey, Brian McBride. Well, Brian McBride predated Bradley. That was Arena. But still, those guys, leaders at Fulham. Carlos Bocanegra, wearing the armband often where he was, including at Fulham. You had Steve Cherundolo, leader at Hanover. Such a leader at Hanover that he was considered the mayor of Hanover. Okay, now these are clubs that are yo-yo clubs, effectively. Clubs that are at the bottom of the top divisions in Germany and England. And you could go on and on with examples of U.S. players like that. That's similar to some of the guys Canada has in Europe now. I think it's better to be a leader. It's better to have responsibility. This is the key thing. Have responsibility. If you're playing if you're a fringe player at Juventus or a fringe player at Manchester United, you don't necessarily have the responsibility that you do if you're counted on at Fulham or Hanover. Or if you are playing week in, week out, and you're a star in Major League Soccer or in USL. So I think responsibility is a key thing, because mentally, I think this U.S. team is very fragile. I think they have a lot of guys that have been built up for no good reason. in the U.S. soccer press. There is a sense of entitlement when they play. There is a sense of entitlement when you get on CBS or Fox and you hear Clint Dempsey saying, well, you know, we should beat Canada. We are better than them. No, you're not. Okay. You didn't beat them in qualifying either time you played them. Okay. So you beat them in random one-off matches in Nations League. Big deal. But there's this sense of entitlement. There's this feeling that all these guys are better than they are. Enough with it. So I think, you know, you're better off being at Fulham. You're better off being at Atlanta United than being a fringe player at Juventus.
Yeah, I think they have to earn that respect and earn that playing time. I mean, that's the big – I don't want to get into this, Kartik, and I know you have viewpoints on this, and we don't have time. But in terms of a lot of – you know, you look at social media, right? Any given weekend in the Premier League season, if Gio Reyna wasn't starting for Nottingham Forest – or if you know, I mean, people would go crazy. Like the coach is horrible. They're like, they don't know what they're doing.
And then what guys are you going to start in front of? Like I one time on social media, I listed the midfielders at Nottingham Forest. I said, well, which of these guys are you going to pull out of the team to put Gio Reyna in? Oh, he's better than all of them. Really?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You're just saying that.
Yeah. So my answer to Robert's question is honestly. Is for the vast majority of those players who do want to go to Europe is go to the championship, because the championship is at a high level. It's the in terms of all the leagues from around the world, it's ranked number 7 in the world as far as the strongest leagues in the world, above many top flight European leagues and top flight leagues from around the world. But get playing time in the championship. Josh Sargent is the star of Norwich City. Daryl DK, unfortunately, all the injuries, right? But he was having a big impact at West Brom. Haji Wright has done so much for Coventry City. But basically, these types of players can earn the respect, earn the playing time, get the experience necessary, and then move on. If they're good enough, they'll get picked up by clubs from, you know, Premier League or anywhere around Europe in terms of if a top flight level, if they want to really, really make a difference and want to get better. And then get even playing time on the national team. For the national team, it felt for too long that a lot of players were basically kind of, no matter how they were playing, if they were playing, they were on the team sheet, basically by kind of name recognition, more so than actually what they're doing on the field. And I think a lot of these players playing week in, week out, to me, is like, Josh Sargent should have been one of the first names on the team sheet as far as being even who actually showed what he's worth, showed it week in, week out in the championship, which is not an easy league. It's a high level, and yet he's not playing much for the USMNT. All right, Kartik, this before we wrap up here, I do want to do two quick things, and that's one is to let listeners know how they can get in touch with us to ask the questions, share their feedback, rant and brave, or agree or disagree with us. Let us know about anything you would like to share with us. There's a few different ways. You can go ahead and send us an email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can go to the website, worldsoccertalk.com, click on podcast, and then leave your comments in the comment thread there. YouTube.com/worldsoccertalk. You can leave comments in there for this episode. And what else? Facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can tweet us at World Soccer Talk, and a voicemail if you want to. It's 561-247-4625. Kartik, before we go, what's going on at Beyond the 90? What are listeners missing out on if they're not reading or subscribing?
Yeah, so a lot on USL is always there, but also some coverage of Europe, and did a feature yesterday on Club de Leon, which is a Nisa club in the Orlando area in Winter Park, that's doing a really good job of developing local players, mixing some Argentine veterans with including Burrito Martinez, right, who was a very, very famous player from Argentina, has got some national team caps, and also was a big player at Boca and at Corinthians when Corinthians won Copa Libertadores, and played in the World Club Cup with some young players. Also going to be looking a little closer at MLS Next Pro real soon, Chris. I'll save it for the article, but yeah, check that out.
Awesome. Cool. And then at worldsoccertalk.com, I know that Kyle Fansler and the team of writers are busy working. One of the stories we're working on this week is about Paramount Plus and how it's really kind of becoming really the go-to must-have soccer streaming service, soccer app for soccer fans in the United States. So on behalf of everyone at worldsoccertalk.com, thank you guys. Enjoy your football.
Then there's Super Diggin'. There's food. And then there's Baker's Superfoods. Made with selected natural ingredients and tasty chicken. There's food. And then there's Baker's Superfoods.
Hey, I'm Joanna Fletcher, host of the podcast Happy Mum, Happy Baby, and this episode is sponsored by F&F Clothing at Tesco, where you can find everything you need to get the kids ready for going back to school this summer. You can kit the kids out for the new term with uniforms and PE kits at just £1.50 a polo shirt, £3.50 for trousers, and £2 a sweatshirt when you buy a multi-pack. Plus, you can get another 25% off the back-to-school range with your Tesco Club card when you head in store until the 28th of July. Make the most of this great value and head over to F&F Clothing at Tesco to find everything you need to get your family back to school ready. Return claims can only be made within 1 year of purchase. Proof of purchase required. T's and C's apply.
Whether you know your kimchi from your kefir or it's your first time boiling an egg, you'll be able to make delicious meals easily with The Guardian's new Feast app. Discover vibrant vegan dishes with me, Mira Soda, hearty comfort foods with Nigel Slater, bold flavours with Yotam Ottolenghi, and many more tasty offerings from expert Guardian cooks. Experience the ultimate cooking app, Feast, today. Download now and enjoy a 14-day free trial. Terms and conditions apply.
Why did we choose a London Business School MBA?
Because of the amazing opportunities to connect with top global businesses
right here in the heart of London.
Because I wanted to join a tight-knit community.
Spanning 156 countries.
Through which peers can become lifelong friends and trusted advisors.
Because I was looking for a school that would be behind me.
Every step of the way.
Partners for life.
Visit london.edu/MBA to learn more.